Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. Welcome to a snowy Arctic temperatures version of Let's Weekend. I'm your host of the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Teresa Sammons and Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. So this is for January 31st, 2026, and I am freezing my balls off. For those you don't know, here in the Southeast, we got hit with a bunch of winter weather, and it's ended up, like, for the last three weekends, we've been at risk of snowfall. And, well, guess who got snow today? A bunch, too. It fell pretty hard for a little while, which is not something that happens down here very often. There were several years in a row when we didn't even get any snow flurries. And the last couple of years, we've actually had one or two days where we get hit with some snow. So go figure. But anyway, amongst the other things we will be talking about this week, probably the big one that you know about, ICE killed another guy this week. And, well, it wasn't this week. I think it was last week. But, and let's just say it's like this one compared to the last one, which wasn't really that ambiguous. This time there was none. That we saw the whole thing on video. We saw exactly what happened. And it looks like the vast majority of people agree. we'll be talking about that. We also had one of our more famous journalists getting arrested. We got a bunch more files released from the Epstein files, and whoo boy, is it bad. We also got news about who's going to be running for governor of Minnesota next time. And of course we got a bunch of, entertainment related stuff, including, announcements for the National Film Registry, some trailers and some other stuff. All that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, let's start off, as we always start off, with talking about all the stuff we've been doing up to this point this week. And as always, we start with Chris. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Yeah, we've been dealing with the snow.
Mm-hmm.
We got probably a good 10 inches or so of snow, which means everything is fucked.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that we're not going to be getting any sort of warm weather for quite a while.
Yeah.
Warm as in above freezing.
Mm.
It seems like every night it's going to be under zero all the time.
Mm.
When I woke up this morning, like it said, it was negative 11. Feels like negative 11, so that kind of time. Yeah, and that much snow means there's pretty much nowhere to put it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So like the streets here, there's no more sidewalks. How much snow there is, so I feel bad for anybody that tends to walk to work or to get food or whatever. Bus stops and all that. So I've seen people just like trying to do what they can. But yeah, it's not a great time for anybody.
Yeah.
And yeah, that means every parking lot is full of huge piles of snow.
Yeah.
They're gonna probably be there for the next couple of months. So that's gonna be and yeah, for things I've been watching, in light of one of the big events of this week, I was starting to watch
Schitt's Creek. Mm-hmm.
Show I've always meant to watch but just never got around to it. And it's really good. I've watched 12 episodes so far. Yeah. Kind of similar to Arrested Development as far as a family that is used to being wealthy, losing all of that. And the only thing they're allowed to keep besides some clothes and such is a town that Eugene Levy's character bought for his son as a joke. Because it's kind of a worthless town, essentially. And so they're forced to move into a motel there and kind of get used to a new life where they don't have any money and are living in, you know, a really like low rent
Hicksville.
town. With the mayor being played by Chris Elliott in a very scummy way that he's really good at. And yeah, really good performances by Eugene Levy, his son Dan Levy, Catherine O'Hara, great as the
His
mom.
daughter is Eugene Levy's daughter is Twyla, I
Twyla.
believe. Yeah.
The mediocre waitress. Where they joke that like she can't make smoothies and all that. So yeah. Very fun show. A lot of fun stuff in there. So yeah, that's been a fun time to jump into. And luckily it was a show that got to finish, so there's not gonna be any cliffhangers or anything. So yeah, that's been pretty fun. I also watched Greenland, which is a disaster movie that features Russell Crowe as a Scottish man who moved to America. So he has a weird accent and all that. Basically, there's this like comet that is approaching the Earth that, they're saying like, oh, it's not gonna do anything major, but they end up finding out that it's broken up into pieces, but the biggest pieces are gonna strike the Earth and largely kill everything. And so his character gets picked by the government to go to the shelter they have set aside for people. And as they, deal with that, him, his wife, and his son, who's diabetic, they go to, the Air Force base to get all this and find out that the son was not supposed to be on the list because he's diabetic. They don't want anybody with, pre-existing conditions, kind of. It ends up not mattering because people end up breaking through the barriers and there's shooting and then planes blow up. And so they're just, dealing with all that chaos as they try to deal with whatever they're going to do. And some wild stuff happens that ends up eventually leading them to get on this plane that is going to fly to Greenland, where the one of the shelters is at, and they manage to get there just in time before the big one hits. And so yeah, it's a decent enough one of these. So yeah, it's weird. It is produced or distributed by, or at least the sequel is, I think, distributed by the company that did the what, The Sound of Freedom. The kind of shitty movie and all that. So yeah, I'm just watching this on a streaming service, so I'm not putting any money directly into that. Sequels about them dealing with the aftermath of this. I don't know what takes place sometime later, but yeah, they're getting out of the shelter and all the do kind of weird shit's going on in the world. I don't know, but decent enough for the kind of disaster. That's been pretty much what I've been watching. For games I've been playing, I have been playing some Fallout 4 on my PS5, continuing the save I have there. So yeah, it loads a lot better than the PS4 version did, which is great. Runs better, though it still crashes. I can get it crashing pretty well by just going to the Creation Clubs area and messing around for a bit, and it'll crash. I had that happen 2 times. I was just trying to check what was installed of the free stuff I had, and it for whatever reason wasn't letting me download certain things. And I went to the lot, They have an area for all your purchases called My Library that had stuff that wasn't owned by me, apparently. Had prices for a lot of stuff, so I was like, this is weird. It wouldn't let me download certain things. Other things, it would download just fine. Then it just crash. I was like, okay. That's enough of that.
Yeah.
But then I went to play the game itself, and everything ran fine there. I was trying to figure out what I need to do, because if I would say there's a weakness with like the Fallout and Skyrim and all that, it's like tracking all the quests. Because they don't really do a good job of saying like, hey, here's where you're going with all this. You can kind of have it tell you like what's on the map, where it's at on the map, maybe. But I was like, there's some stuff already labeled on there, and I was like, because I'm in Diamond City, let me figure out what's going on here. And I figured out one quest I was doing, and that was fun. It was with the guy on the radio who's very like nervous. And you got stage of fight, which went weird because I was doing the fighting and then a guy got aggroed that I guess wasn't supposed to. And so everybody pulled out guns and shot him until he died. It was like weird stuff still happening because it's still a Bethesda game. I went to start one quest line that involves a heist that happened like 20 years ago. I talked to the wife who was supposed to initiate it. And no matter what I did as far as dialogue options, she would hand me the picture and like start, you know, like initiate the quest, and then she would immediately get aggroed. Nick Valentine would start shooting her, and then eventually it would be like, oh, you want to send Nick Valentine to which sanctuary or, you know, base you want to send him to, and do that automatically, and then he would get aggroed on me, and if I left the house, everybody in the whole area got aggroed on me. So I was like, this thing's busted. This whole quest line, I tried it a few times. Luckily I had an autosave from right before that, so I could not mess up any of my actual saves. So I was like, all right, I tried everything and could not figure out a way to get this to actually work. So I was like, all right, screw this. I was like walking around the town. I had keys for houses that I didn't know what they were from. I think there's the one quest line in there where you're kind of going to the one bar and there's a fight that starts. And I think people got killed in there, either directly from my involvement or just because that's how it went. I probably stole keys from them as a result. But then I was out and about in Diamond City and I found one of the guys dead on the ground with a trigger man nearby, also dead. I was like, this is weird. Like, this is a guy I had a key for his house. I was like, why the fuck is he out here? I can see he got killed by this trigger man, but how's the trigger man dead? I was like, I don't know. I took all their stuff, so their naked bodies are lying on the streets of Boston. So that's fun. And yeah, I almost started the Far Harbor DLC because it was just like another Nick Valentine like mystery thing about this kid who went missing. I was like, this is awfully far away from Diamond City for one of these things. And so I started, and then they're starting to talk about Far Harbor a lot. And I was like, that's weird. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to go over to Far Harbor. And it's like, oh, this must be the DLC quest to go start that. It's not labeled anything special on there. It's just like, oh, this missing kid. It's like, okay, I'll go look around and see what's going on there. I was like, well, I don't want to go there yet because I don't get locked over there for this stuff. So bounced out of that. But yeah, I'm in a pretty good place with that game. I think I'm like level 26, 27, something like that. So fairly far into it. Kind of pretty good on ammo and all that. So I'm not running out of stuff. So yeah, you do run into, they do a good job like having just some random stuff happen. Because I was going up to that house to find out where that is. And there's like these dogs hanging out there, the feral dogs, and one of them was a legendary dog. It ended up killing me because I wasn't paying attention to my health. and went back towards that area, and the dogs were kind of there, not the legendary one, but then there were a bunch of bandits or whatever they were, raiders maybe, who mm-hmm. were fighting me, and then I got to the last one, and he just turned nice for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm not going to be nice to you, and I just blew his head off. Just killed him right there, because I'm like, I'm not dealing with whatever the fuck is going on here. Bugs. Mm. Yeah. Had that happen a couple times, where like, a fight between like raiders and bandits or something was going on, and I was like, alright, I can deal with whatever's weird's going on here. And start killing some of them, and others decided to go nice for whatever reason. Like, I don't,
mm-hmm.
I've not done anything as far as I know to be nice to the bandits, so. So yeah, that game's still busted in some ways. Still playable and all that, but yeah. Just a weird thing. But yeah, kind of just going around, mm-hmm. putting new things on the, new icons on the map, so I have places to fast travel. I'm trying to level up mm-hmm. so I can get this this perk, so you can fast travel while over encumbered, because that is pretty easy to do. But yeah, like, not finding any really interesting, more powerful weapons, and don't really have any weapons to, like, any mods to add that makes them any better, really. It feels like a lot of the mods, like, there's clear ones that make it more powerful, and others just make various slight changes that don't really improve anything. Like, I assume you're just hoping to get legendary drops, and that stands above the rest of the guns, but otherwise it's kind of like, eh, it's whatever. Whatever you got bullets for, that'll most likely work. But yeah, that's Fallout 4, just kind of screwing around in there for a bit. And I've also been playing more Euro Truck Simulator 2. I finished up the event for the Nordic Horizons DLC. Got the last couple jobs there. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. Did not find any underwater tunnels yet. I might just look up where the hell those are supposed to be. They call them out by name, but those areas look really nice. A lot of mountains and such, and big expanses you can kind of look on, some really nice bridges and all that. Mm-hmm. That kind of fun stuff. So yeah, that's a really cool DLC. So now I just need to go back to American Truck Simulator and finish up the Louisiana event. Then I'll be done with that stuff for a bit. So yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
I've been playing a game for review that might have already published by now. I don't know. It's Cozy Caravan. It was in early release on Steam forever, I guess. Mm-hmm. But on the 15th, they dropped it for Switch. So we got the code, and I was doing the review, and I was pretty much just like playing that whenever I wasn't working, like so much. I feel like my Switch is very, very old now and very, very slow. And oh, that game lagged really, really bad. It crashed so many times, but I still wanted to, I'm still going to play it. It's not great on the Switch. It's just not great on the Switch. Other than that, been watching some Daria. Again, we go through phases where we do. We have a version that still has the actual music from the show kind of spliced in there, since that's obviously in the stuff that's on, I think, Paramount streaming, that it doesn't have the music, which, come on. And, you know, same thing with Beavis and Butthead. And I guess you don't even really realize how much you're missing it by streaming the stuff until you go back to stuff that was recorded off of TV, you know? So I've been watching that, and then I finished up the first episode of, I think it's like a part small mini series documentary from Ken Burns on the American Revolution. A lot of meat in that, obviously, because, you know, that was an event time. And of course, Ken Burns is Ken Burns, you know.
Yeah.
Enough said right there. But really, that's about it. Playing that game so much. Brandon, what have you been watching and playing?
Well, as for me, as far as like gaming is concerned, I'm still playing Splatoon 3 like at least 30 minutes to an hour every evening. And I've gotten much better at it now, but like whenever I try to do like one of the anarchy battles, which is the stuff like, tower defense or clan blitz or whatever, I've come to just realize and accept the fact that Splatoon is not the kind of game where you can really coordinate anything. It's pretty much pure, everybody's in it for themselves, even when it's a team effort. And I've come to realize this because there are several times I'm playing this game and I'm thinking, the objective is over there. You kind of need to do something to defend it. Nope. Everybody's just all over the place trying to kill whoever is nearest to them, and it's like, freaking kids, man. But something else I've definitely noticed, especially over the last 2 weeks, there is a okay. So you know how like in Splatoon, when you're like in out in the city and everywhere, and there's all these others like other players' avatars, and they have like a little message or picture or something that they've posted that you can see whenever you run up to them. There is a lot, and I mean a lot, like a drowning in a lot of anti-ice messages like everywhere.
Nice.
And there's also a bunch of messages where people are like, people are like, dude, just keep politics out of kids' video games. And I'm like, kind of. A lot of these kids are being infected by this yet. So, yeah, so, like, I mean, to be completely fair, the Splatoon community of all the Nintendo communities has always been, like, the most progressive and political minded of all of them. So, I'm not terribly surprised. Like, that's been a thing since Splatoon 2 came out years ago. But, still having, playing a bunch of that, and I'm also, still playing Donkey Kong Country 2 as well. I've gotten further into that, really making a lot of use of, making, that the rewind and, saving areas features that the Switch 2 offers. 'Cause otherwise, I don't know if I remember when I was a kid, I got this game for my birthday and I managed to beat it. And now I'm like almost 40 and I'm playing this and I'm like, how the hell did I ever beat this? Because
I think we were
it
better when we were
is.
kids,
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, it was. Because it is so much more difficult than the first Donkey Kong Country was. And the first Donkey Kong Country was a rare game. So. Rare was famous for making games that were difficult. So, and there's that. But anyway, the other game I've really been playing a bunch of is Donkey Kong Bonanza, and it is an exceedingly strange game. Like even by Nintendo standards, it is very, very odd. The whole idea is that you're playing a young Donkey Kong, where he's, I guess, trying to make his fortune out at this mining colony on this island that's away from, where he lives, and he's basically hunting down, banana gems everywhere to eat, and he ends up coming upon this weird little talking rock that sort of attaches itself to him for some weird reason. And turns out that this little talking rock is none other than a young Pauline, which is like the weirdest thing ever. I'm like, okay, how? I know that Nintendo has never really been the kind to like make a kind of like timeline for a lot of their franchises, but I'm wondering like how that works. So does that like mean that like the modern Donkey Kong is like in his 30s or something?
I mean, it kind of sounds like it.
And does that mean that he's like older than Mario? Because like I don't know, but the gameplay itself, like, because it's based around, it's like, oh, it's based heavily around digging, and that involves, digging holes into the walls, digging holes into the floors, digging holes into the ceilings. There's like a bunch of all of these, hidden areas and hidden banana gems and fossils that you can get that also work as currency. A bunch of stuff like that and like challenge areas, but a lot of it involves you like literally digging either into walls or into the earth, and the amount of destruction that all of these areas can undergo is kind of amazing, I'm not gonna lie. And like it kind of reminds me of how in Tears of the Kingdom, where there's like three layers of the overworld, where there's the one that's like on Hyrule, there's the one that's like up in the sky with all the ruins in the air, and then there's the like the little dark world that's like underneath all of it. And then you realize like all of this stuff is operating independently at the same time. And it's like there's these whole areas that you might never actually see unless you actively go out and look for them. And it's crazy just the amount of stuff that they managed to shove into in this game. Now, the game essentially, like, if you play it, it's like, yeah, it's got all the digging and stuff, but it essentially still has like the guts of like Super Mario Odyssey, because all of the like bananas that you're picking up, they all are like they all have like their own titles based around like whatever task it is that you had to do to get them. Every time every time you die, you end up getting a bunch of your currency taken away, just like in Odyssey, where you get a bunch of coins taken. All of this stuff is spread out. It's not, you have to like actively go out and hunt for a bunch of it. It's not just sort of shown to you. But other than that, like and it's odd too, because basically the entire game takes place underground, which is extremely weird, because you can look up and like there's a blue sky above you, but no, it's all underground, and it's inhabited by like these like weird like sentient rock creatures. It's inhabited by zebras and ostriches. And it's all so strange. And Pauline herself is like, she because she's a singer. That's like her big thing, is she's a singer. Her singing abilities come into the game a lot. Whether it's like to unlock new areas, or in particular, eventually DK gets like these like transformation abilities, where he'll like become like a more powerful version of either himself, or he'll become like a zebra gorilla or an ostrich gorilla. It's very odd. And she has like this song that goes along with every one of them. And the way you end up getting these powers is you have to go to like these village elders that are like essentially like these giant super old versions of like whatever regular inhabitants of whatever area you're in. And for whatever reason, all of them have decided to like retire from whatever jobs they were and to become a DJ in their old age. And in order to get the they call it the Bonanza Power, you basically have to hunt down these like giant vinyl records and then bring it back to like the giant turntable that's like in front of them. And then Pauline has to sing the song, and it's just, good Lord, it's strange. It is very, very strange. But good Lord, is it fun. Like it is incredibly entertaining. It is a very fun game. Only thing I don't like about it is that sometimes the camera goes a little crazy and wants to kill you. Like and that largely has to do with the fact that because you're constantly like going underground and everything, the camera seems to kind of struggle trying to show like, yeah, you're like underground, but there's also a ground above you, and you can like climb up to it, and there's this stuff around you, and it just, honestly, I'm so kind of surprised that the Switch can handle all of this stuff. Well, Switch 2, but still, the way it can handle all this stuff is crazy. But yeah, that's pretty much it for stuff I've been playing. I've also been Reading as usual with, you know, books and stuff. I've been reading The Essential Horror by Joe R. Lansdale. Joe R. Lansdale is like one of those like cult writers who's like super prolific, but a bunch of his stuff is like either like independent or like small press stuff, so it can be really hard to track down a lot of his work. So the fact that he decided to like release this this like horror anthology is awesome, frankly. Like, I'm glad he did it because otherwise I would be, a lot of this stuff is really hard to track down. But if you've ever like wondered like who is it that came up with the whole idea of like the racist backwood hillbilly horror type stuff, Joe R. Lansdale is the guy who pretty much helped invent that back in the 80s. Yeah, and other than that, just, you know, I'm dealing with some personal stuff. I won't talk about it tonight. I'll probably wait and do that next week because still got some stuff to work through. But that's pretty much what I've been doing. So, you guys got anything you want to add before we move on?
Next.
All right. Well, then, in that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So over the last few shows, we had been talking about like really obscure, really terrible fighting games. We've talked about Balls 3D, we've talked about Tattoo Assassins. I believe last time, I can't remember what game it was we talked about last time. But this week we're going to talk about a fighting game that was very mediocre, and yet it was crazy promoted. If you like it was hyped up like insanely in a way that is honestly by modern standards very unethical. And also because of like some of the people who ended up working on it and ended up, I think, like the last time any of them did anything for video games. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but the game is called Rise of the Robots. It was put out in 1994 by Time Warner Interactive. It was originally developed for the Amiga and the MS-DOS, and then it was originally like ported to consoles, including the SNES, which is where I ended up coming a contact with it. It also was on the Mega Drive and the 3DO. There was a it comes with a single player mode and a two player mode. The game was developed by Mirage Technologies, which is a famously also did like that. Well, they weren't a terribly big deal. They did Ashes of Empire and the Humans in 1992. This game was like their fifth game released, and it was essentially developed by a team of five people, including one of the original members of the Bitmap Brothers, Sean Griffiths. And essentially, what this game did and how it was promoted was they were wanting to utilize a high level of artificial intelligence that had never been in other fighting games at the time. They then would augment this by circulating these ultra slick looking screenshots that they would circulate all around the press and, you know, in like previews and advertisements and stuff and gaming magazines everywhere. And it, the thing is, it used pre-rendered back it used pre-rendered graphics, which is, you know, in modern days is a big no-no. It looks amazing if you see like screenshots of it, and then you actually watch people play it, and it looks like hot garbage. The actual game is like super simple. It's a one-on-one fighter. In the story mode, you can only play the lead character. There is a two-player mode, but that one is where only one of the players in the two-player mode can like choose other fighters. One of the players has to be the main character. And despite the talk of like them using artificial intelligence and everything, the characters you end up fighting are dumb as a rock. Like, all of them are. Every single one. You can literally, like, kick some of them to death over and over again, and the game will end. The other problem is the fact that, well, I'll get to that. But essentially what the plot of this game is that, and this is crazy, because for a really, like, kind of mediocre one-on-one fighting game, this game has an extremely detailed story. Basically, all you need to know is there's this, like, this city out in space on, like, a colony world where, like, 70% of the population is made up of robots. And at some point, one of the like major AI, the artificial intelligence that is in charge of, like, keeping all of this stuff in order, called the supervisor, eventually decides that it wants to become a real boy, and it starts uploading this really potent computer virus that ends up infecting a bunch of the other robots in the city, and so the robots decide to go and rebel. The supervisor itself ends up taking on a vaguely sort of humanoid form that looks like a gynoid, so, you know, kind of like Dural from Virtua Fighter, but lamer. It then takes controls of the corporation's various facilities, infects all the other droids at the plant, then spreads out to the city. And eventually, what happens is that the government seals off the city, and to end it, they decide to send in a cyborg. And that's literally what the game calls it, a cyborg. You are called Cyborg. In the like press materials, it has a name as Kotan, that somehow, for some reason, is unaffected by the computer virus, because, you know, it's a cyborg, meaning it has a human brain inside of it. So they send it in, and it's like, okay, your job is to go in, beat the hell out of the robots, destroy the supervisor, and get rid of the computer virus. And that's basically what the game is, what, like, the overall scenario is. And, like, one of the biggest issues about this game, like, right off the bat, the graphics look, like I said, really sleek, but in motion they look awful. And it doesn't help that, like, a lot of the character designs for these are, like, really blocky and unimaginative. Like, I get the idea that, like, they were trying to go for, like, some kind of some degree of, like, realism or whatever, for them, but it just ends up looking really ugly and stupid. The other issue is that pretty much all of the droids that you end up going up against in this game are extremely durable, which means that 9 times out of 10, basically all of the fights that you get involved in are won by a timeout rather than, you know, a knockout. Because none of your attacks can really do a whole lot of damage to them. And really, pretty much the same with you, the player character, as well. Even though, like, every time you make a connection, it sounds like somebody's, like, smacking a girder with a lead pipe or whatever, it doesn't really do a whole lot of damage. Also, is the simple fact that none of these characters, like, have any kind of special moves or anything. All of them only have, like, really basic regular moves, and that includes you. So it's all basic punches, kicks, jumps, that kind of thing. You know, no throws to speak of or anything. Very, very, very basic. And like I said, it was made by, like, a team of, like, 5 people. And once again, this is another example of, like, when corporate comes in and basically forces them to, like, strip a bunch of stuff down so that they can, like, focus on the visual stuff and make it look better than, you know, the actual game itself. 'Cause once again, that's exactly what happened here too, and it did not help. On top of that, they tried to bring in some major star power by having somebody really famous come in and help compose the soundtrack. And you know who they got to come in to compose the soundtrack? None other than the guitarist for Queen, Brian May. And A lot of it is just taken straight from his solo album Back to the Light, which came out like 2 years before this game came out.
Multitasking.
Actually, most of the in-game score was composed by Richard Joseph, but Brian May's name was like all over the damn thing when they were like porting this out. I mentioned it was ported to a bunch of game consoles. It got onto, like I said, the Super NES, the Mega Drive, the Game Gear, the 3DO Interactive Multiplayer, the Amiga, and, no joke, the Philips CD-i.
Wow.
They also were in the midst of making a version for the Atari Jaguar. But of course, that one never released. For unknown reasons, probably because they realized they were making a game for the Jaguar. There were also versions for the Game Boy and the Master System as well, but those never came through. There was a director's cut edition that was released on PC, which mostly included, a bunch of like work in progress type stuff. And like right off the bat when this game was released, people could sense that there was a problem. Because you know how like sometimes when publishers put out a game for reviewers, but they only do it like either on the day that the game comes out or they do it like only a few days in advance. Yeah, that's what they did. They literally gave review copies out only a few days in advance. And like, as you can imagine, it got slaughtered in the press. Edge magazine gave it a 2.10. EGM gave it a 4.4 for the SNES and 3.5 for the 3DO version. Next Generation gave it a 2 out of 5. Amiga Power gave it a 5%. CD-i 65. 3DO. The highest one was for 3DO, which was like a 4 out of 5, and that's the outlier. A reviewer for Next Generation remarked, "Although the glossy rendered images make the seven different warriors look truly remarkable, the actual playability of the game suffers from the same lack of control plaguing most PC fighting games." He further criticizes the poorly designed opponent AI and labeled the game one of the biggest disappointments of the year. GamePro panned pretty much all versions of the series, but especially the Game Gear version, summarizing, quote, "The bad control, weak gameplay, and choppy animation infest this cart from start to finish." They particularly criticized the moves as boringly basic and limited, noting that the choppy animation makes the player feel disconnected from what is happening on screen. Reviewing for the Super SNES version, Electronic Gaming Monthly stated that the graphics are excellent, but the poor control and limited number of moves cripple the game. GamePro labeled it one of the most unappealing fighting games ever released for the SNES, citing the dark and bland control scheme and the extremely weak and choppy controls. EGM, when it came to like the 3DO version, they absolutely shellacked it. Like they found even it worse than the GamePro than the Game Gear version. They all criticize it for having overlong cutscenes, a severe limited number of moves, difficulty executing even basic punches and kicks, and really long load times. They did actually release a sequel to this game called Rise 2 Resurrection in 1996. That one was published by Acclaim. And once again, they brought back Brian May for one of the songs. Most of the music was done by Tom Grischow. And unlike the first game, you can control any robot, both in one and two player mode. Unfortunately, it's weirdly enough, even though it has like more features than the last one, including like finishing moves and stuff, it's somehow even worse because the animation is even choppier, the graphics are even worse looking than the first one. And it's just IGN gave it like a 2 out of 10. Like that's how bad it was. Next Generation gave it a 1 out of 5 stars. So yeah, this is one of those pick me too type fighting games that came out in the mid-90s that was extremely ambitious for what could be accomplished back then, and it is absolute garbage. Weirdly enough, though, there were a bunch of like these trash fighters that made their way onto PC back in the day. And next time, I'm going to talk about one of those that's arguably like the absolute bottom of the barrel worst of all of them, Brutal Battle. But until then, that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that, it is now time to move on to the next portion of the show proper, if you will. And as always with the show proper, we start us off with the assholes of the week. And you heard what I said at the top of the show. Yeah, Ice killed another guy. Chris?
Yeah. So this was one of those situations that the Trump administration couldn't spin this at all.
Nope. No matter how hard they tried.
Yeah, a man named Alex Priddy,
Yeah.
who is an ICU nurse at a VA hospital, was at the protest, was trying to help, I think, a woman that was getting pushed around by ICE agents, and in the process, he got shoved down to the ground by them. They found a gun on him, which he's allowed to have. It's legal in
Yeah.
Minnesota.
He had his license on, he was licensed to carry. It was in his holster. He had not touched it.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
they sort of swarmed around him, took his gun. Then I think multiple of them took shots at him in the back, just murdered him in cold blood. And there was multiple videos of this, multiple people giving their testimony of what happened. No real way to spin this, though the Trump administration tried to spin it. It's like, oh, you can't have guns at a protest, which people have shown numbers of videos of people doing that, especially when Obama was in office. People love to parade
Yep.
around in protests with big assault rifles to prove whatever that he wasn't going to take their guns, which is like, I don't think he ever said he was going to, so have fun
I
with
still
that.
remember that one image of that dude with the rocket launcher in line at like a Walmart or whatever.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I'm pretty sure the one he was carrying was like a single use RPG, which is
Yeah.
hilarious.
Oh my
But
God.
yeah.
And yeah, this was kind of the last straw of any way of spinning anything that ICE is doing as a good thing. Not that they haven't tried. And as much as they've tried to make sort of public movements of like moving Dan Bovino elsewhere and potentially being willing to get rid of Kristi Noem and all that. ICE is still in Minnesota, still in Minneapolis, still doing the same things, just they're being smarter, I guess. So nothing's really changing, though they are talking about now sending people to Ohio because the Haitian community down in, Springfield and other parts of Ohio, their protected status is ending on the 3rd, I think. I believe they're planning to start some shit on the 4th, so
Yeah.
that'll be fun.
Oh yeah. So and as for like and like the same thing they did with Good, they did that whole thing where they tried to trash their reputations, like what was he? He was a nurse at the VA. And he was Catholic, and he got like a Catholic Charity Award and everything, and it's like, God, like they could not have picked a worse target.
No, and the
Yeah.
surnames of both of them. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. His parents put out a great statement
Yeah.
to set the record straight, not let Trump try to set the narrative of what kind of person he was.
Yeah. So yeah, that ended up happening, and it's basically been, well, at least until today, the one thing everyone on could only talk about because of how absolutely awful the whole thing was. And yeah, And then we got this story. So Don Lemon, a famous journalist, he was with CNN for a while before they let him go. And now he's a independent journalist working in Minnesota. Him and a couple of others were charged with federal civil rights crimes after an anti-ICE church protest. Yeah, this one's kind of complicated.
Yeah, so this was in relation to the church in Minnesota where the I think it was the pastor or one of the other people working there is an ICE official from the local field office, to which a number of people found this out and started wanting to protest there. They arrested a woman last week who they used AI to change her portrait to show her crying, which is bullshit. Don Lemon was there as a journalist to just cover what was going on. So they arrested him. They arrested an independent Minnesota journalist named Georgia Fort, as well as two others that were there. Both the journalists advocating that they're going to keep continuing to cover these protests and such. So, yeah, they're trying to, they indicted the four on charges related to the interruption of a religious service at the church. I think partly claiming that they interrupted other people's rights to practice religion, which is like, that seems to counter the other part of the First Amendment there of exercise to free speech and peaceably assemble. So yeah, that's a fun whole thing. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. Mostly it's going to be a threat to these people. But I assume the case will be dropped at some point, though they did manage to find federal grand jury to indict them on this. So that's troubling, but that's nothing new for this administration. So yeah, there you go.
So yeah, that shit happened. And then this crap happened in my home state of Georgia. The FBI came here and took hundreds of boxes of ballots and other documents from the 2020 presidential election in Fulton County.
Yeah.
Not
Because
okay.
that's, yeah. And that's a thing that Trump isn't going to let go. Those, whatever, 17,000 votes he claimed were somewhere that would have won him the 2020 election that don't exist. But yeah, they pulled up with warrants and pulled up box trucks up to a warehouse in South Atlanta, where we were with hundreds of boxes containing ballots and other documents related to the 2020 election. Yeah, they have not revealed what the purpose of this whole thing was. But the warrant is under seal, so they've not really explained it other than finding some bullshit evidence of whatever Trump claims happened there. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, just more ridiculous shit going on.
And then last asshole of the week, some random guy in Minnesota, while Representative Ilhan Omar was doing a town hall, rushed up to her with a syringe filled with apple cider vinegar and then squirted it onto her and was then charged with assaulting her. And if you've seen the video, she was about ready to tear this guy apart.
Oh, she was going to clock him and she had that pen in her hand, man. She was going to go. She was ready.
Yeah, she wasn't willing to like leave the events after that happened. She wanted to finish what she was going to talk about. But yeah, this guy faces a charge of forcibly assaulting, opposing, impeding, and intimidating Ilhan Omar. Yeah, the substance was water and apple cider vinegar. Yeah, he here to say, well, after spraying this, she's not resigning. You're splitting Minnesotans apart. So yeah, this is one of those people that has been swallowed up by the algorithm. Somebody managed to piece together like his legal history, like through court documents and all that, as well as his social media activity. And basically he got divorced like 15 years ago, got married again a few years later, and then divorced again, and didn't really post anything political until like 2021, I think, after the election. Finished up and starts posting about the about the election being rigged and all this, and then gets his daughter committed to a mental hospital. She is trans or something. I forget what the specific issue was. You know, all that kind of fun stuff. Has two daughters. One was old enough to move out and get away from him. The other one was still not old enough to do that yet. So yeah. Seemed like he became a lonely, sad person, and then became a real shitty person. And carried out a thing that he had been planning, as you know, pitiful of an action it is. Luckily didn't do anything worse than that, so lucky there. But yeah. Kind of a weird and sad situation. So there you go.
Yeah. But we do have a hero of the week to wipe that terrible taste out of our mouths. The state of North Carolina worked with a nonprofit to erase medical debt for 2.5 million people.
Yeah, to do. There were 2.5 million North Carolinians whose medical debt was erased under a new statewide agreement with hospitals. The hospital wiped away debts. All the state's 99 hospitals agreed to stop collecting certain debts dating back to 2014. They also pledged going forward to automatically discount care for patients who qualify for financial assistance without requiring them to apply. For a family of four, that means an annual income of less than $96,000 qualifies. Yeah, so that's great news. That's debt that is very hard to deal with and pay for, because, you know, having anything to do with the hospital automatically gets the cost to skyrocket.
Yep.
For things that you may not be able to avoid any other way. Hopefully more states do this, because this is a great thing to do just to help out people that need it.
I hope so. Especially my state. But, yeah, so with that, we're moving on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night, sadly, we have to say goodbye to Miss Catherine O'Hara. She passed away this week at the age of 71. Catherine O'Hara was the weird mom in all the movies that you grew up with. Like, that's the best way to describe her. She's in the first two Home Alone movies. She's in Beetlejuice. She's been in a bunch. She was in a bunch of stuff over her career.
Yeah. She was in Second City TV with a bunch of other great comedians, you know, John Candy especially, and a bunch of people that sort of wear a lot of big name comedians came out of. Yeah, Harold Ramis, Dave Thomas, John Candy, Eugene Levy came out of that. She arguably one of the funniest people to come out of the out of Second City, and especially one of the funniest people just in movies and TV in general for the last 30-40 years. Just somebody who could steal scenes without, and just as a frequent actor in Christopher Guest movies. Best in Show, For Your Consideration, Waiting for Guffman, The Mighty Wind. She did a lot of voice work. I was in The Nightmare Before Christmas, Chicken Little, and a bunch of others out there. She was in The Last of Us show in the second season. And also Schitt's Creek is like her big role in the last like 10 years or so of her career. That was a great role for her in her older age. So yeah, awful to lose a person like her, and she certainly inspired a lot of people, other actors and all that. Just awful news. I was trying to look, let me see. Yeah, the other comments on her. Where is it at? Yeah, Macaulay Culkin, who obviously had a special relationship with her, considering he played her mom and kind of always seemed to be a friend for the, as he grew up, posted on his Instagram.
Yeah, I'm sure she was probably more of a mom figure to him than his actual mother was. If you've ever done a little research on the whole saga that happened when he had to, you know, basically legally divorce himself from his parents because they kept taking all of his money.
Yeah. He posted a nice message on his Instagram. Mama, I thought we had time. I wanted more. I wanted to sit in a chair next to you. I heard you, but I had so much more to say. I love you. I'll see you. And yeah, a ton of other people posted messages. Nobody had anything bad to say about her. Everybody loved mm-hmm. her, working with her and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Just go watch the John Candy stuff with her in Home Alone. That is all improv mm-hmm. from John Candy. He didn't want any lines. He did it all. That's why it's so awkward, because he made it awkward on purpose.
Yeah.
And all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So she left a bunch of amazing movies behind her that have been huge, like, pop culture watersheds. So she's going to be remembered for a long time. Don't worry about that. But, moving on from there to more serious stuff. 3 million more Epstein files were released this week. And actually, they were released, I think, yesterday. And they basically hit like a nuclear bomb. Because the shit that these things reveal is horrifying.
Yeah. At least the stuff that isn't like things being reported that never got...
Yeah.
Followed up on and verified.
Yeah, that is one thing we do have to caution when you're looking through these. A lot of this stuff is stuff that people either reported or like a tip that they gave or something they said on an interview. A lot of it cannot be corroborated. Mostly because, you know, there's just either no evidence of it or they weren't able to like, you know, find any other statements to go along with it. But it doesn't really matter, because the stuff that they can corroborate is downright horrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot of wild stuff in there. For like public figures right now, Elon Musk is in there.
Asking to go to the island. Which it directly contradicts what he had said for years, that he never wanted to go there.
Yeah.
So.
Barry Weiss's wife is in there. Unless that's a coincidental name.
But yeah.
Most likely it's her.
Yeah.
There's... Trump is mentioned a bunch.
Which we already knew that one. Yeah. But, you know.
Former Prince Andrews continues to be in a bunch of this stuff.
Yep.
There's a Slovakian official...
Mm-hmm.
Was also in there.
There was a bunch of like Eastern European related folks show up in there too, which isn't terribly surprising.
Yeah, a co-owner of the New York Giants is in there.
Yep.
A decent bit, to which he's tried to claim that, you know, he didn't do anything, and it's like, good luck with that. Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff in there. People are still digging into it, and
yeah, freaking like Robin Leach of all people shows up there once or twice.
What?
The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous guy. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he shows up in there once or twice.
There's some other interesting like internet news in that 4chan is a part of this.
Yeah, because him and Christopher Poole got really chummy. And for those of you who don't know who Christopher Poole is, he's Moot. He's the guy who basically started 4chan. And was its prime ran it for several years until he sold it.
Seems like they had some sort of meeting.
Yeah.
Same time he created the political channel on
Yeah,
4chan.
poll. Yeah.
Yeah, where all the Nazis were at.
I mean, it's totally possible that that's a coincidence, but when you're talking about this type of stuff, you kind of have to, like, there's a lot of weird shit that lines up. And that,
Yeah.
like, opens up another can of worms, because that basically means, like, the whole alt-right thing was basically started by Epstein, inadvertently. Like,
Yeah.
or on purpose, we don't know.
Yeah, there's Peter Thiel shows up, and there's one point, I think after the whole thing with Gawker, he sent Peter Thiel an email basically like, oh, I wish I knew about this, I'd have helped fund this. It's like, because yeah, I guess Gawker was one of the earliest publications sort of going after Epstein and his files and all that shit. He's very much interested in shutting that whole thing down. So, turns out when you're as rich and influential as he is, he got into a lot of places, big and small, that you wouldn't expect. I guess hip stuff, like the two of the guys from Rockstar Games are in there, Leslie Benzies and I think Sam Houser, I forget which of the Houser brothers is mentioned in there for like shitty parties they would go to and harass women and all that. So you know, there's a lot of wild connections to be made in there. And like, to be clear, I saw somebody mention this specifically, like he had already Epstein had already been convicted as a sex offender, I think a level 3 sex offender in New York in like 2008. So if you see any of these emails well after that, these people were dealing with him well after that, knowing full well what he was. So just in case you need to know how innocent these.
And like I said, this the and then there's the pictures that ended up showing up, like that weird picture of like an infant lying in between two raw chickens. I
Yeah.
don't know what that, the one about the nude
What?
girl, like Neil. Yeah, it's it, I, it, yeah, it's exactly what I said. There's this like one of like a young girl kneeling before a giant crucifix in the nude. There's a bunch of like pictures of girls in like nude and in their underwear that are obviously underage. It's really gross. And it's made me absolutely convinced now that we, as not just as a country, but a society, really need to make a cap on the amount of wealth that a single person can acquire. Because it's become increasingly obvious that at some point when your net wealth reaches a certain number, you basically start losing complete touch with reality. And this is like the absolute, like the best example of that, because like the shit that they were getting up at this place is downright diabolical. So yeah, moving on from there, we got this other news, which is that the federal judge has dismissed a federal murder charge for Luigi Mangione so that he avoids the death penalty.
So there's some good news there. Yeah, they were mainly seeking these federal charges as a means of being able to give him the death penalty and execute him. Yeah, this judge dismissed the federal murder charge that enabled prosecutors to seek capital punishment, finding it technically flawed. Yeah, the judge wrote that they did so to foreclose the death penalty as an available punishment to be considered by the jury as it weighs whether to convict Mangione. He also dismissed a gun charge, but left in place stalking charges, carry a maximum punishment of life in prison. Yeah, to seek the death penalty, prosecutors need to show that Mangione killed the CEO while committing another crime of violence. Stalking doesn't fit that definition. So yeah, that's a fun thing. So we'll see where this case goes, but at least not going the way that the Trump administration wanted to go. So that's some positive news there.
So that's happening. Next up, Trump and the House GOP have proposed some big voting changes, which of course includes a bunch of the ones you already can expect. They don't like mail-in voting. They don't like blah, blah, blah. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Includes weird things like requirements for photo IDs before people can vote and proof of citizenship. It's like they already do that stuff. Both of those would be put in place in 2027. Others would be done immediately, like prohibiting universal vote by mail and ranked choice voting. This stuff that is built on the false premise that there is widespread cheating, which is there's not. It's such a small percentage that it's not worth it for anybody that can think rationally about this stuff, which is not Trump. And yeah, the Dems have rejected any of this stuff. But if they, do it now before the midterms happen, they could potentially find a narrow split to getting it passed, but I don't know that this is going to have a guarantee of anything. But certainly because they want to try to rig the system to avoid the blue wave that has come out, so we'll see where that goes. But yeah, this is a bunch of bullshit here that is not going to do anything but help the Republicans.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and then we found out that that Senator Amy Klobuchar has announced that she will be running for governor of Minnesota.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? Whatever.
Get her out of the Senate and let somebody else come in.
Yeah, who's actually worth a damn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nothing else really to announce that. We all know that Tim Walz, he's not going to run for re-election. So there's a bunch of people clamoring to take his place, and she's one of them.
Yeah, she would make sure that the GOP doesn't somehow win that seat. So,
yeah.
Kill two birds with one stone.
Yep. But moving on from there, we found out this week that there are some species of mushrooms that cause people to hallucinate tiny humans everywhere.
Yeah. This is a fun whole thing that has been making the rounds lately. Yeah, so every year, doctors at a hospital in the Yunnan province of China brace themselves for an influx of people with an unusual complaint. Patients come with a strikingly odd symptom. Visions of pint-sized, elf-like figures marching under doors, crawling up walls, and clinging to furniture. They treat hundreds of these cases every year. They come from Lanmaua asiatica, a mushroom that forms symbiotic relationships with pine trees nearby forests and is a locally popular food. Known for its savory, umami-packed flavor. It's sold in markets, it appears on restaurant menus, and is served at home during peak mushroom season, between June and August. But one must be careful to cook it thoroughly, though, otherwise the hallucinations will set in.
Yeah, you have to, if I remember correctly, you have to basically, cook this thing for, 15 minutes, or otherwise you start seeing all the little people.
Yeah, they mention here at a mushroom hot pot restaurant there. The server set a timer for 15 minutes and warned us, don't eat it until the timer goes off, or you might see little people. it seems like very common knowledge in the culture there.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a fun mushroom that seems to give people the same type of hallucination, which is
not a very strange.
Yeah,
because obviously everybody knows about psychedelic mushrooms. Those are... People have known about those for pretty much as long as human history itself has existed. But the thing about, most psychedelic mushrooms is that they affect the person differently. They see different things, they hear different things. The fact that there's this one mushroom that only makes you see this one thing is extremely odd.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's more here about them trying to figure out, like, what exactly is it about this mushroom that's doing this. But yeah,
So
this
weird and
is.
cool.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, for the record, I'm looking at pictures of these and they actually don't look too bad. Like I could totally see myself eating some of these, but man, that is odd.
Yeah.
Anyway, from there now we're going to the entertainment portion of the show. Our first entertainment story we got is the National Film Registry has announced their new 25 editions for 2026. And let's see what they got here.
Yeah, there's more silent film era films in this. Has six, more than the usual. I believe because they say here more had been found and restored. Because there's a lot of silent films from that era that did not survive, just general storage because they didn't really consider how weather could affect these things. Which is kind of one of those interesting things. So you get one from 1896 in here called The Tramp and the Dog. The Oath of the Sword, 1914, Maid of Macmillan, 1916, The Lady, 1925, and Sparrows, 1926, and 10 Nights in a Barroom, 1926. So there's that. You get White Christmas, High Society, Brooklyn Bridge, which I think is the first documentary film from the Werner Herzog. I forget who specifically did that one. But yeah, that's some good stuff. That starts getting to things that we would probably know. The Thing is in here from 1982. The Big Chill, Karate Kid from 84. Philadelphia, 1993. Glory from 1989. Before Sunrise, 1995. Clueless from 1995. The Truman Show, Frida. The Hours from 2002. The Incredibles. The Wrecking Crew, Inception. The Loving Story and the Grand Budapest Hotel. So yeah, a bunch of good movies there.
Oh yeah. So good looking shit. They got a bunch of good stuff in there. John Carpenter especially was happy to find that out 'cause he's still very proud of that movie. And then next up, Sinners. The film Sinners broke the record for all-time Oscar nominations with 16, which it deserves 'cause it's an amazing movie.
Yeah. Especially for a movie that nobody really wanted initially. Warner Brothers ended up being the one to pick it up. And yeah, it's gotten 16 Oscar nominations, followed closely by One Battle After Another with 13. So those are two of the big ones you'll see in most categories. Both produced by Warner Brothers, so they ended up striking it rich with that. I know from some of the ones I saw here, K-Pop Demon Hunters is got two nominations, one for I think Best Song. The other one was for let me see where it's at up here. Animated feature film. Which that is Arco, Elio, K-Pop Demon Hunters, Little Amelie or the Character of Rain, and Zootopia 2. And yeah, Golden is going up against the song from Sinners, I Lied to You. So there's two great songs there. I think Golden has a good chance to win that one. Let's see, best film. Where's that? Begonia, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Party Supreme, One Battle After Another, Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinners, and Train Dreams. Yeah, Neon's got a couple there. Warner Brothers has a couple. Netflix has a couple there. A24, Focus Features, Apple. A lot of good stuff there. And I think the one cool one is Delroy Lindo got a nomination for supporting actor, which is his first Oscar nomination, which is long overdue. He's had some really good roles. Never got the pick. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see who wins some of these awards. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting Oscars this year. We'll see. And then we got this news. Bob Iger is stepping down as Disney CEO by the end of this year, 2026.
Yeah. Yeah, he's planning to step down as CEO and pull back from daily management for the end of his contract on December 31st. Yeah, he's ready to move on from the grind of being CEO and just edge out with his money, I assume. He has plenty of that. So we'll see. So, yeah, not really too much else to say. I don't replace him. Maybe they'll find a new Bob. In their last couple has been Bob Iger. Another Bob, I forget what his name is, and then they went back to Bob Iger. Bob Chapek, that's right.
Yep.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and now we got this news. Dragon Ball Super Beerus. It's an enhanced anime series being announced along with the DB Super continuation.
Yeah. So they had the 40th anniversary event. They were announcing some stuff. They announced a new game that doesn't really have much about it. It's just like a name and a couple images. Mm-hmm. They announced they're doing Dragon Ball Super Beerus. It is sort of a Kai version of the first season of Super, which is essentially a cut down version of the Beerus movie, Battle of Gods, I think it is. So they're doing that to make it look better and whatnot, to maybe adjust some things. So that's the thing that's going to happen, and that's supposed to be out later this year, I believe. And then they also announced they're continuing Dragon Ball Super. They just basically stopped after the Tournament of Power arc.
Yeah.
The manga kind of kept going for quite a while. I think maybe they ended that last year or something like that. Last year, this year, I forget. But yeah, they announced that they're doing the continuation, which is called Dragon Ball Super the Galactic Patrol.
Yeah.
That's going to be a follow-up series that features the next big arc. So, cool. Because they just kind of randomly decided, like, oh, we're done doing that for now. Because I think they worked on the Broly movie and probably started working on Daima and a couple other things. So,
yeah.
Yeah, going back. So, that'll be cool to see.
Yes, it will. So, yeah, there's that. And now we got a few trailers to go for. We got an official trailer for DTF St. Louis.
Yeah, this is a weird-looking HBO Max series that features Jason Bateman and David Harbour in it, where it's about an app, I think it is, for people that have weird kinks, I guess.
Yeah.
It involves Jason Bateman making some weird stuff going on. Hard to describe what's going on in this, but worth watching the trailer and seeing like how weird it gets. Where he asks a woman to just get on her phone or whatever and sit on his face. That's what he wants her to do. So that starts on March 1st on HBO Max, so that's one to keep an eye on.
Yep.
Pretty sure Monty Python had an entire song about that.
Yeah. and we also got an official trailer for The Muppet Show. They're bringing it back.
Yeah, for a special that they're doing that's on February 4th. And this looks good from what they're showing here. Mainly features Sabrina Carpenter with the Muppets kind of getting back into doing the show. So I'm looking forward to see what that looks like. So yeah, that's cool. It's on Disney Plus and ABC. I think you'll be able to watch it live, ABC or Disney Plus, whatever.
And we also got a teaser trailer for Daredevil: Born Again Season 2.
Jessica Jones is back. That's cool. As well as continuing with the stuff that's happened at the end of that last season, which has a lot of wild stuff going on. So I'm curious to see more of this. That'll be starting on Disney Plus March 24th. So, yeah, about a month and a half away. So that'll be fun. That's a rare Disney Plus Marvel show that's getting a second season. There's cool stuff to do with Daredevil. There you go. All
right. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Masters of the Universe. That's right. They're making a live-action He-Man movie. And kind of sort of using the old one from the 80s as sort of a takeoff.
Yeah, where he's in Earthworld.
Mm-hmm.
And needs to go back. Tries to find his sword to go back.
Yeah.
And all the weird shit that goes with that.
Yep.
Okay.
Sure, whatever.
I don't know if this trailer is doing anything to make me think this is going to be anything to give a shit about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with, like, how good some of that animated stuff they did a handful of years ago was. That was, like, the only thing that made me give a shit about the He-Man universe.
Mm-hmm.
That and the She-Ra series, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, this is out June 5th. We'll see if that ends up working out.
Mm-hmm.
At least the Skeletor looks alright.
Yeah, actually looks like Skeletor.
I assume the old movie was just a rubber nightmare.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, with that, we officially have ourselves a show, folks. We have got ourselves a show. So, I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, RSS, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just give it a few minutes. We will, eventually. Much like the creeping snows, we will eventually show up there. But we're going to go ahead and wind it all down here. Thanks once again, Chris Sologi and Teresa Sammons, for joining me on this little endeavor. To all of you out there who are listening, whether you're someone just discovering us or you're somebody who's been with us since we started this shit almost 10 years ago, good God. If you like what you hear, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance they'll like us, and that sounds like something that'll benefit everybody. At least I think that's how numbers work. But yeah, join us next week when it'll hopefully be slightly warmer, I will not be freezing my nuts off, and hopefully the world hasn't blown up by then. So yeah, see y'all next week. Good night, everybody.